Good evening, everybody. Erev Tov. Thank everybody for coming out week before Pesach. I think it's certainly my house. It was kind of light relief to get out of the house and come and learn something as opposed to clean or whatever one's supposed to be doing at this time of year. And certainly we're heading very nicely towards the end of the Sefer. If we have after Pesach about, I think, four lectures for Shiurim, and with the way we're going, we should be making a Siyum at the end. So that's the end of Shmuel Bet, which is, Mitz Hashem, is really quite an achievement. So we, again, ending the Merit of Shalom, finishing the rebellion here, and chapter 19 is really going to tie up all the loose ends. I just want to say one word about it, because, you know, last week I started talking a bit about the question of why did people go for it so much? Why did people want to throw David out of the picture so quickly? And it's very surprising, particularly, you know, you've got a David HaMelech, you've got a king who is just so remarkable in so many ways, and yet the people, they saw Avshalom and they went for him. And, you know, it really led to such a tragedy and all the consequences that we read about last week. But the idea that I started talking about last week, which I think is valid, is this concept that maybe the kingdom of David was too good. Maybe in the people's eyes, what they saw was a situation where, you know, if David puts a foot wrong and he commits a sin with Bathsheba, whatever the sin was, and he goes into teshuvah mode, if you want to call it that, he repents and repents and repents, what happens is that he seems to be, you know, sort of getting away with it. He seems to be in a situation now where nothing can shift him. And the suggestion is, and this is the author that I've been looking at from Israel, somebody called Rabbi Ostreich, who's written a very interesting sefer, kind of yeshivish sefer, but it's got some interesting thoughts there. And he wants to suggest that maybe the people felt that this was just too good and too... what's the word? It becomes something which is dangerous because, you know, you'll never get rid of it. This will be a kingship which, when you've got a King David and you've got somebody of that caliber, okay, everybody is kind of comfortable with that in a sense that, you know, somebody is sincere who's running the show. But once you get a few kings down the line and you get somebody who's a rogue, somebody who you're not going to be able to trust, then according to what we've seen in the whole kingship scenario till now, you can't get rid of the bad guy, right? The bad guy is there as much as the good guy is there. And the people felt, and this is the suggestion, that you know, we need to rethink the whole establishment of kingship. Now, when Shmuel allowed it, we go right back to the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, we understand that Shmuel said to them, once you accept the package, you have to live with it for the rest of history. This is not going to be something that you can just send back. Return to sender, RTS. You can't do that. Once you've got the package, once you've got the king in place, you have to accept the concept of dynasty. That was the basic difference between the kings and the judges before them. So, you know, you're done. But at this point in time, the people probably felt, and my feeling is that it goes back to that early story of when the people chose the king. It seems to be that the word of the nation, the word of the people is significant. We explained it at the time that in the Torah it says, Amor, that the people can say that they want a king. So as much as they can say they want a king, they probably now came to the conclusion that they could say, we don't want this king. We don't, not that we don't want the king, but we don't want the concept of a king who's going to be absolutely entrenched to the point where we can never get him out. And it's such an interesting suggestion because obviously Avshalom covers the concept of dynasty in the sense that he's the son of David, but there's no concept with Avshalom of continuance. They're taking Avshalom as he is, he looks the part, he's obviously convinced them that he is the part because he's a nozir and everything else that goes with him. And at the same time, there's no strings attached. When it comes to Avshalom, they are saying, we'll take you, and what comes next, we'll wait and see. In other words, there is this kind of sense that from the people's point of view, they want to change the whole format of kingship. That's the suggestion that this rabbi makes. And it's so interesting because that would explain, in a way, why David was pushed out of the scene, because David represents the format which they are now questioning. The format of a king who can basically do all the good, but then he does something which everybody recognizes as being very, how should we say, borderline to the point of being negative, even though they didn't understand what was going on behind the scenes, as we explained with David and Bathsheba, but nevertheless, and they see that the king does tshuva, then he gets away with it. In their eyes, he's immovable. You can't move it. And that will happen in his son and the grandson and so on and so forth. So the idea of the people now supporting Absalom, to a certain extent, makes a bit of sense. Not a lot of sense, makes a bit of sense. But of course, the problem is that Absalom is not the person that he seems to be. He looks the part, he's got the hair, he's got the looks, and he's the Nazir, and he tries to convince everybody this is a spiritual Nazirut, but clearly what he's really doing, he's appealing to the masses, his PR is very good. He's making a presentation to the public, which behind the facade, behind what he represents, there is unfortunately not very much substance. And that is the problem. And I think people learn from this, but the question, of course, is how much do they really learn? Once you've started the rot of rebellion, and I'm saying all of this because after Pesach, we'll see chapter 20, there's another rebellion, Sheva ben Bichri. And who is he? Sheva ben Bichri comes from the family of Binyamin. So we're going back to the Shaul days. We're going back to a rebellion, the next rebellion, which will be, again, questioning the whole essence of Malchut Beit David, saying that if we started with Shaul, or Sheva ben Bichri says, I represent Shaul, we should have a continuation of kingship in the tribe of Shaul, in the tribe of Binyamin. So this is what's happening now. There is a real adjustment which is taking place in the minds of the people and in the situation around them. Yeah.
I hate to differ with everybody
else. Yeah, yeah. It's only a suggestion. I'm not sure if I'm 100% convinced.
Like we're reading in current day politics into anachronistic.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think had the people wanted to go in the path of one new king, they would have gone away from Absalom.
Yeah, that's the problem with his suggestion. To have Absalom, the only problem is, of course, he's the only guy at the time. He looks the part, he takes the bull by the horns, literally, he sets himself up. So they went with him, all right? Not as the son of David, but as the new style of king.
I read into it instead, probably they went into it because he was the young upstart.
Yeah.
And he was promising whoever supports him a great respect of royalty.
Yeah.
David is already on his way now, he's already waning, so that's why I look at it as a very...
I hear you. And I think you've got a certain amount of legitimacy in what you're saying. I only put it out there because it's an interesting suggestion. The other thing I wanted to just share with you is this phenomenal thing. There's a Tehillim about this. And I've kept referring to Tehillim for simple reason that Tehillim is the lev, is the heart of, not only the heart of David, it's really the heart of who we are. Am Yisrael, it really revolves around Tehillim. As I mentioned a number of times, when I sit on the A-train, you know, that the girl from Stern is reading Tehillim, and the woman from Washington Heights, from Spanish Harlem, is reading Psalms in Spanish, and someone else is reading Tehillim in whatever language it is. Everyone's reading Tehillim. You know, it's like the whole train. Are they reading the New York Times, or are they reading Tehillim? It's unbelievable. And that's something very special. You know, this speaks the language. And we know the Tehillim because we say it, you know, we might say it, hopefully more than once a year, but you certainly say it, you know, as the minhag on the Leil Yom Kippur, you say the first four Tehillim. So Tehillim number three, Gimel, Mizmor LaDavid. What does Mizmor mean? David is singing a song of praise. About what? Bevorach b'mnei Absalom b'no, when he's running away from Absalom. So you say, wait a minute, he's running away from Absalom, Absalom wants to kill him. Mizmor, he's singing a praise. So Chazal comment, the rabbis say, you know what? David realized that he was told by Natan there's going to be tzoros from his own house. So he said, better the devil I know, the devil I don't. You know, at least I know Absalom and I know him. And I suppose he felt to himself that at this point when he's writing the Tehillim, I know my life is in danger, but, you know, is he really going to go through with it and kill me? Maybe David did not believe that would be the case at this point in time. And therefore, for him, it's Mizmor. Unbelievable. And this Tehillim again is so full of emunah. You know, I mean, we know this. Hashem, morabu tzarai, rabim come in my life. So many people come against me. Rabim omrim lenafshi, nishuatalo behimsela. There's no hope, there's no salvation. They say to me, ve'ata Hashem magein ba'di. You, God, protect me. Kavodi, merim roshi, you raise my head. Kol Yehi Hashem Ekra, call to God, V'aneni Mahakotsh, and He answers me from His holy mountain. Ani Shachavti V'shan. That's why we read it, because, you know, it's about going to bed and waking up. That's why it's read, you know, these Tehillim before you go to sleep. Hekitzosi, You woke me up, Ki Hashem Yisbecheni, because You have supported me. Lo Yira Mirivotam. I'm not afraid of the masses of people, She'asaviv Shatu Alai, who are surrounding me. Kum Hashem Oshieni Lekai, save me, O Lord. You broke the teeth of the wicked. Okay, hakeh shina. We're going to say it next week, next Monday night. The idea of blunting the teeth, I think it's sort of the same image over here, which you do to the Rosha. Lashem Yeshua Lamcha Sechasela, and to God is salvation. Unbelievable tilim. Wow. And this is a man who's in the throes of running away from his life, from his son, from the entourage, and yet, Mizma Ladovin. Pele ploim. Unbelievable. But that's David HaMelech. This is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a man who is so bound with his connection to God, with his godliness, that nothing phases this man. All that he desires in life, all he wants is to be more and more connected to Hashem, whatever way that is. Now again, the way David connects to God is very difficult to explain. Do we really understand this connection? I don't know. I suppose we have to say that it's one of those things that's why people read this, that we should get some sort of inspiration, an idea from this, from these values, from these lofty ideals of David. But there's no question in my mind, the mizma, the idea of a song at this point in time, wow, it's remarkable in the extreme. Alright, so what we're going to do today, we're going to look at chapter 19, Perek Yutet. It's quite a long perek, and it really just ties off the loose ends of the rebellion. But unfortunately, by the end, we're ready for another one. We're ready for a new rebellion, as we'll see, as I said, after Pesach, chapter 20, the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri, which is a very strange story, with an interesting halachic twist as well, which we'll come to. So look at chapter 19, we're going to go through this. And again, I'll try and point out some of the more salient points. And, you know, bear with me, because it really is an amazing story. The end of the rebellion is an amazing story in its own right. The reaction of David, again, always is going to be something unique. So we read the first pasuk last week. Vayigaz ha-melech vayal eliyat ha-shar. He's heard now that Avshalom has died, been killed. Vayev, so he goes to the top of the gate, wherever that is, some sort of place where I suppose he has a bit of solitude, and he cries, Vako Amar Belechto, he goes there, he says, Bini Avshalom, Bini Avshalom, Miite Muti Ani Tachtecha, oh that I would have died instead of you, Avshalom, Bini. The Gemara comments that he says the word Bini here 7 times. And Bini is the concept of Shiva Maduri Gehinnom, that he's raising Avshalom out of the 7 levels of Gehinnom, whatever that means. Meaning that every time he says Bini, he wants to pull Avshalom back from a sort of eternal, to quote the Christian phrase, eternal damnation. So this is what he's doing here when he says Bini, Bini. He's praying for Avshalom, the neshama should have an aliyah. I wanted to mention at the beginning, talk about neshama having an aliyah, that what day of Nissan are we today?
Seventh,
because the 5th of Nissan is the Yotzah that I mention every year of Nechama Leavitt, Zichron Livracha, who passed away in 1997. The Shabbos. Whatever it was. I can never work out these numbers. 1997. Tov Shin Nun Zayin. And is buried on Har Menuchot. Very, as I mentioned last year when I spoke about her, her Matseva just has one word on it, Mora. And that is a Musa Haska. It's unbelievable Musa in its own right. As far as she was concerned, that was her essence. That's all she wanted on the matseva. And you know, next time you're in Israel, if you go not far away from where Rav Moshe Feinstein is buried as well, that part of the Har Menuchot is where you come in literally to the cemetery.
Oh, wow.
It's up at the beginning there, and it's something just to pay a little homage if you're paying a modern sort of homage. I sent Jerry on a wild goose chase to go and visit up there. That's also important. Up there, Ben there, but that's a different world. Sorry?
8 times.
It was 8 times, right, because that was the eighth was...
The last one
this pasuk is five.
Yeah, because for a little... To send him to... That's right, it's 8 times, yeah.
This pasuk is five.
Yeah, and there's going to be another 3, and it could very well be we had it before. I didn't check where the 8 times, I just saw Bini.
Sorry?
Oh, Apostle K. Alright, so we'll see that. All right, so what happened here, of course, now the king is absolutely distraught. The king is absolutely distraught. But let's see what happens next. Pasuk bet. Vayugadli Yoav. Now here comes Yoav, the nephew, the mover and the shaker, right? He's the guy, he's the catalyst of the whole story. So Yoav is told, v'inei ha-melech bochet, v'itaber Avshalom, he's mourning for Avshalom. And of course Yoav is, on the one hand, very much loyal still to the king, although we had our doubts when he brought Avshalom back from exile. That in itself was a statement which does suggest that he may have gone with Avshalom if things would have been a bit more successful. Yoav would have switched sides, which he does later anyway, when Adoniah has his rebellion. Yoav supports him, but at this point in time Yoav is still faithful to David. But he realizes that the king in his situation here is in great danger, in the sense that he's not functioning as the king. So he says to him, and he doesn't allow him this moment of, or these moments of mourning. It's unbelievable. So what does it say? Pasuk Gimel. V'atehiyat Yeshua b'yomahu le'evil cholam. And what happened was that the victory which they had, because remember, the supporters of Absalom were defeated, and the supporters of David won, is turned into evil. It's turned into sadness. And this, of course, is not good public relations, right? Because everybody heard the king is mourning, or the king is very sad, the king is upset because of his son. So and what happened was that the people, as it were, when they ran away from battle, now you've got people trying to sneak into the city. In other words, the control of this particular place where David is, not in Yerushalayim, he hasn't come back yet, is, as it were, in danger. There is seemingly something going on which the king needs to take control of, and Yoav is afraid that the king is not in control. So look what happens. In the meantime, the king has covered his face. That's the other three times. So he's still mourning for Absalom. He can't. He just can't put any words together. He's just so full of sadness and avelus. It's terrible. You can just imagine. I mean, again, if David is so emotional in the positive sense, you can imagine what he's like in a situation of avelus. So Yoav has got to pull the king out of this. So he goes into the king's house where the king is. This is very strong. He says to David, that doesn't even say him by name. He goes in, he says straight away, you've embarrassed all of your servants. They saved you. The soul of your sons and your daughters, which I think is the first time we've actually mentioned daughters. So who knows how many daughters he had. The nefesh neshecha and your wives, the nefesh plakshecha and your concubines. Who we did mention, the 10 women that were involved with Avshalom's effort to show that he was the king. All right. And of course, what has happened here is that Yoav is giving him a real musa. A musa drosha. La'avad sonecha lisnoet avecha. What happens is that you seem to show that you love your enemy because you're crying over Avshalom, and you're hating your friends because you're ignoring the people who helped you in the rebellion. Ki yigadata hayom, because you're saying today, ki ein lecha sarim v'avadim, you seem to say that you have no servants, you're not recognizing them. Ki yadati hayom, ki lu Avshalom, not lo, lu. Ki lu Avshalom chaya, I know that if Avshalom would still be alive, kulana ayom mitima, we would all be dead. Ki az yesha b'necha, it would seem to be okay. In other words, you're overdoing, he's telling him, you're overdoing the whole bit for Avshalom. Even though the king is so distraught, and even though the king is so upset, Yoav says, politically, you've got to be strong. You can't ignore the people who supported you, and at the same time, show love for the people who hated you the way that you're doing it at the moment. Now, David, of course, doesn't think politically. David is a father who's just lost a son, and he's already lost a number of children. So, you know, David is in a different mode. But Yoav wants to bring him back to reality. Now, again, is Yoav trying to sort of stamp his authority over David at this point? As I said, all the way through Shmuel Bet, I leave you to make up your mind about Yoav. I'm not going to say anything more than the evidence as presented in the Sefer. Right? Yoav is given a mixed press by Chazal. That you'll see when we learn it's Hashem. Please God, I hope we'll get to sort of Melachim Aleph. We'll see Yoav is mentioned there before he dies. He says that his house was kamidbar, was like a wilderness. And the rabbis explain, what does that mean? It was open like the house of Ram Avinu. He had a house of chesed, People would walk in from, you know, to the house the whole time in order to gain some sort of help from him. So he had a very, very great reputation as a Baal Chesed. He was the head of the Sanhedrin or one of the members of the Sanhedrin, whatever. But at the same time, we always feel that, as I said, the catalyst in all these very devious situations, the politics, who is the arch politician? Yoab. So, you know, I leave you to sort of make up your mind about him. I mentioned this a few weeks ago and I say it again. I really am not sure 100% how to, you know, what I would write in his on his epitaph. I'm not quite sure. But, you know, I'll leave you to say whatever or think whatever you want to think. But look at this. He goes on. He says, Chet, so, va'atakum. So he says to the king, get up. Say, go out, v'daber alev avdechot. Speak to the people. In other words, the people are going to lose. You're going to leave you if you don't speak to them. Ki b'shem nishbati ki eincha yotzei. Because he said, I made an oath, right? I swear by the Lord. If you do not go out, what will happen is that no one will stay with you tonight, right? In other words, you'll lose everybody. This is going to be the worst thing ever happened to you. You think you've had it bad till now. This is going to be a lot worse because you're going to be by yourself alone. The people are going to forsake you. This is really tough. And vayokom ha-melech, the king, listen. Now that's, you know, I was thinking today, one of the things, what can we say about David? All the discussions that we've had, and one of the things that has come through sort of again and again is the fact that he does listen to people when they talk to him. All right? You would say that, you know, the king was in a position where, what does he need to listen for? He, you know, he's got this direct line to God. But he shows this tremendous sense of listening to people around him. And this is, you know, it's just one of those things as a leader. And this is one of the clues to me of leadership. You know, if I was giving a course in leadership from the Bible, then this is a pasuk that the whole story that I would include. Because David shows the fact that you've got to be a good leader, you've got to hear. You've got to listen to what the people are saying. You've got to have that finger on the pulse. And if you don't have the finger on the pulse, but you're sort of out in your own world, detached from the people, then eventually what will happen is the umbilical cord will snap, will break, and you're off into outer space, but they are not with you. And this is so significant. David does this again and again. He hears, he listens. He listens to Natan for sure. And in this case, he's listening to Yoav. Very interesting. And I just thought of that, you know, as I'm preparing this, this is something which we might take for granted, but wow, it's tremendous. Tet. So he did get up, and he sat in the gate, right, in other words, to receive the people. And then the word went out to the people. Now, Melech Yoshev Bashar, the king is there. He's in the gate of this city, which remember was on the other side of the Jordan. We're not told the name of the city. Maybe we were told before, I don't remember, but it's obviously somewhere sort of relatively small and whatever, but the people are with him.
Is it Gilad?
Maybe in Gilad, somewhere like that. Vayavo kolam lifnei ha-melech. So the people come before the king, v'Yisrael, nas ish la'olam. Of course, the people who supported Avshalom, the men of Israel, had already run away. They ran back to their tents. Yeah. Correct. We're getting the overtones already of the wording, right? We're getting Yehuda and we're getting Yisrael. And this comes out loud and clear here. Already, David is not handling the politics between the two groups. And we mentioned this a number of times, that Yehuda was singled out from the beginning. All right? You know, Yerumish Betech Yaakov, no, sorry, Lo Yochum Shevet Mi Yehuda, Lo Yochum Shevet Mi Yehuda, right? No, the whole Lo Yosef Shevet Mi Yehuda, and all of the concept that Yehuda has a special place. We spoke about it a long time ago, the Abarbanel explains that Yehuda was always going to be the role model for all the tribes. And the problem with that now, of course, is that David, being of Yehuda, has given Yehuda an even more, how should we say, inflated view of their own importance. And you'll see how they behave over here. It's really quite surprising. You would expect them to be a bit more humble, I suppose is the word, and they're really not. All right, the men of Yehuda are standing on their covered like mad, and they want David to represent them. And you'll see what happens by the end of this chapter. Listen to this. Vayhi kolam nadon b'chol shitei Yisrael. So now, of course, the people were now arguing amongst all the tribes, Lemor, to say, HaMelech Yitzilana Mikafa Yivainu, the king saved us. For whom Melatonu Mikafa Plishtim saved us from the Plishtim before? V'yata Barach Min Ha'aretz Mi'al Avshalom. And he's run away, he was forced to run away because of Avshalom. V'Avshalom Hashem Hashachnu Aleinu Met Ba'Milchama, and Avshalom is dead. V'yata Lama Atem Machrishim La'ashiv Et HaMelech. So what are you waiting now? Why are you silent for bringing back the king to Yerushalayim? In other words, the people amongst themselves want the king to go back to Jerusalem. The king is alive. Long live the king. They want the king to continue. So the David hears this conversation. He sent a message to the Kohanim. Remember those two guys. They are the fathers of the two sons who were the runners, if you remember. And they said, Dabru Zignei Yehuda Lema, speak to the elders of Yehuda, to say, Lama Tiyu Acharonim, why are you sort of, as it were, the last ones, Lashiv Et HaMelech El Beito, to bring the king back? In other words, he hears the men of Israel talking, but he doesn't hear his own people wanting to bring him back. Udevar Kol Yisrael Ba'al HaMelech El Beito, and the word of the rest of Israel has come in. In other words, he's heard all the reports from the different tribes, but he doesn't seem to hear Yehuda supporting this particular idea, this sentiment amongst the people, let's get the king back to his palace in Jerusalem. So he's having an internal discussion with his own people. So Yud Gimel, Achai Atem, you are my brothers, that's me, Besari Atem, you're my flesh and blood. Why are you waiting? So he's got something to say for his own people. He expects loyalty from them. Very interesting. You know, there's a lot of... This chapter, I think, is one of the chapters that is not really dwelt on very much. And yet, there's so much in David's character which comes out here. As we said before, the ability to listen. We're now saying the demand of loyalty. If you're going to be supporting me and I'm coming from your tribe, then you guys have got to be out there at the front. You've got to be setting the tone along with everybody. If not, ahead of everybody else. You know, certainly along with everybody else. And this is very interesting. So Yud Dalit goes on. Well, Amasa Tomru, tell Amasa, hello, Atzmi B'Sariata. So Amasa, who is, remember, the son of David's sister. In other words, he is David's nephew, Amasa, right? If you remember that sheet that I gave you last week, the Amasa was through Tzruya. Tzruya had the sister, and the sister was conceived out of wedlock, seemingly. Amasa was conceived, and he is David's nephew. Again, Yoav is also a nephew. So these are all, this is all mishpacha, as I said, this is all family business. So what does Amasa say? Amasa Tomru, tell Amasa, hello, Azmi Usariato. In other words, you're one of us. You're from Inzer, as they say. Ko Yaseli Elokim, Ko Yosef. So may God do, and so may He continue. Im lo sar tzavati yelefanai kol hayomim tachad Yoav. Very interesting. Here comes the real politics. Yoav is still around. Yoav is larger than life. And yet the king is appointing Amasa, who is a nephew from another sister, to be the head of the army instead of Yoav. So, I mean, what this suggests about the king's feelings towards Yoav, seemingly the king is wary of his nephew Yoav, and he prefers Amasa to be the head of the army. We will know later on, without spoiling the plot too much, that Yoav, I already put it on the sheet, he actually kills Amasa. He deals him a blow in the fifth rib. Yoav knew how to kill people quite directly. He had no problem with that when it had to be done. Now the question is, why he kills Amasa is going to be a whole discussion that we will get to.
Couldn't David at this point maybe figure it out that Yoav was the one who killed
him? I guess not only that, but he's also figured out Yoav, you know, Yoav he stirs the pot all the time. Yoav brought Avshalom back, and I guess David at this point, and particularly the way Yoav was talking to him just now, you know, the king's laying on the floor, he's crying his eyes out. Okay, and he can't function, and you're trying to bring him out of that, but you're talking to him in such a way as if you're addressing, you know, it's like, this reminds me of how, this is like Jane Austen, you know, this is the 19th century, you know, the Lord of the Manor is talking down to the servant. I mean, this is the King of Israel, and you're Yoav, and yet, you know, he's talking to him in such a rough sort of way. I mean, it's really, really fascinating. Now, you can say, you know, argue this from a psychological point of view, and say to me, well, maybe as a psychologist or a psychiatrist or whatever, a doctor, maybe this is what you had to do to the king. It's like slapping somebody around the face to bring them back to reality. I don't know. But I would not have tried that with David. I'd be perfectly honest. I would have been a bit wary, because you never know how he's really going to react. This is David is a very, how should we say, he lives by the seat of his pants the whole time. Chavav, sorry, Tedvav. So let's see how we go. I want to get to the end of this chapter. As I said, it's quite long, but we'll get through this. So David managed to bring all the men of Yehuda, the heart, together. Interesting, of course, the idea of Lev. And they sent a message to the king, come back and bring all your servants. Everyone is waiting for you. So he came to the Yarden, to the River Jordan. Yehuda bar Gilgal, and Yehuda came to Gilgal. In other words, the tribe, all the men came to Gilgal to bring the king across the Jordan. Very interesting, because there are echoes of a previous crossing of the Yarden. For those who are into this, you know, go back to Sefer Yoshua. And they came to Gilgal after they crossed the Yarden. They came to Gilgal. There's like a, I don't know what it is. This is like sort of re-experiencing history. All right? This is something that we talk about next week in the Haggadah. V'noma lefanov shira chadasha. I heard a wonderful vort in it. The vort goes really that v'noma, I should say, if shira chadasha, the first part of Halo, what we say in the Haggadah, is referring back to B'tzeis Yisroel in Mitzrayim, why should it say V'noma? We will say a new song. It should be that we sang a new song referring to the past. Not V'noma, but V'ne'ema. There was said a shira, a song, when we came out of Egypt. B'tzeis Yisroel in Mitzrayim. What's V'noma? Why is it in the future? And there are some, that Mishnah Berurah makes a change in the wording of the Haggadah. But I heard today, it was really interesting, that the idea of the Seder night, the idea of Pesach, is that you are re-experiencing as if you're doing it now. The Rambam says, Ki'ilu ata yotze, as if you come out ata, it says now. And of course, if you're doing it now, it's V'noma. We're now going to sing a new song. The first part of Halal, and the reason why it's broken into two parts, is that the first part of Halal is not necessarily Halal, a traditional Halal as we recognize it. It's Shira. It's a different concept. It's a concept of singing praises as if we have just now left Egypt, yet again, at the festival of Pesach. And it's interesting, because when you look at the Kadesh Rechatz, the simonim at the beginning, you've got Maror, Matzah, what is it? Motzi Matzah, Maror, Korech, Shulchan Oreh, and then only then do you have Halel, Nirtza. And if the first part of Halel before the Motzi was Halel, it should have said that word Halel before Motzi. Should have been Halel and then Motzi Matzah. Why does it keep halal only after the Shulchan Aruch, after you finish the meal? Because that's really when the halal starts. The first part of halal is not halal at all. It's actually shira. It's a song which is being sung now, as if you're going out of Egypt at this moment. It's an amazing sort of concept. And again, all of this is, as it were, reliving the experience, as we try to do on Seder night. And here, the men of Yehuda, just to make the comparison, are going to do the same thing for David, as was done to the Jewish people when they crossed into Eretz Yisrael for the first time. Look what they do over here. There's a little bit of a side point here. There's a sidebar. Yud Zayin, before we get to the crossing, just hang on one second. Vayamah Shimi Ben Gera. The Shimi's got a problem. Shimi was the guy who cursed the king. He's got to make peace with the king, otherwise he's going to be in trouble. Ben Ayimini, Bashev Bachurim, he came from Bachurim. Vayeridim Ish Yehuda, he came with the men of Yehuda, Likrat Melech David, to welcome the king. Now, you know, you'd say to me, Shimi's got a bit of a chutzpah, but I think more than that, Shimi knows that if he doesn't do something quick, his head and his body will not necessarily remain attached for very long. But Elef Ish Imo Mibinyamin, he brings 1,000 men. That's a kind of a message, you know, in case you get a start with me, I've got 1,000 buddies over here. But Siva Sa Beit Shaul and Na Beit Shaul, and the servant Siva, who remember, brought food to David originally. But Chamesh Nasa Bana Vesrim Avadav, he had 15 sons and 20 servants, he told. But Tzolcha Yadin Ithne Amelet, and they all split the Yarden. Very interesting. The Chazal say what they did, they put their shields in the river, and they made a kind of path in the river. Obviously it was very shallow, but symbolically they were kind of splitting the Yarden all over again. It actually does happen later on in Tanakh. With Eliyahu HaNavi, when he's looking to find a place to go to Shemayim, it says that he crossed over the Yarden with Elisha, and there was a Kriyas Yarden, there was a splitting of the river. And of course it happened when Am Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael, when the river backed up, the river went in the other direction, it became a mountain of water upstream, and the whole downstream of the Yarden was clear. That's a whole story. But here you've got like a symbolic, David is entering Eretz Yisrael. It's like Am Yisrael coming into Israel. Yet again, we're recreating the entry of the Jewish people back into Eretz Yisrael, a new parsha. Very, very significant what they're doing here. They are splitting the river with their shields, and there's this Ki'ilu sort of Am Yisrael coming back into Israel, this time being led by a king as opposed to Yoshua, though Yoshua, most people argue, has the status of a king in that story. But whatever it is, the symbolism of this is very great. Everybody realized what they were doing and how significant it was. Very interesting. Yutet. Vavraha vara. So they all crossed over. Lavid beit ha-melech lasota to be'inav, to do what was good in his eyes. Vishimi ben Gera nafal of them. Shimi ben Gera is now going to eat humble pie. He falls on his face. But over a yardin, when the king crossed over. Vayomel ha-melech al yachshav li adoni avon. Please, O master, don't consider it a sin. I know that I did something bad towards you. Your servant did something bad. When you went out of Jerusalem, don't take it to heart. In other words, why should he not take it to heart? Very smart. Why? What is Shimon ben Gera doing? He says, David, I know that you're into teshuvah. I'm also into teshuvah. In other words, you know, I learned from the master. If you have now succeeded by admitting your sin, then I, Shimon ben Gera, I'm going to do the same thing. And of course, this answers the question that we have later on when we're told that the Rebbe of Shlomo is none other than Shimon ben Gera. So my guess is that David was so taken with this, right, that, you know, he saw a kind of remorse in Shimi. This has got to be the guy who's got to teach my son. And he became the Rebbe of Shlomo. That the Chazal say that Shlomo was so afraid to marry Bat Paro, his first wife, that he waited till Shimi ben Gera passed away. It says that after Shimi ben Gera died, that's when he got married. It's interesting.
Even though he made him the Rebbe, he warned about Shimi
ben Gera. He was warned, yeah. Because Shimi was, you never know, he could get, you never know what's going to be. All these guys, there's politics. I mean, this makes the Knesset look very tame, I think, in comparison. But anyway, Chafala, if you ever sat in the Knesset, you know it's not a tame place to sit. It's, you just got to duck every so often when they throw missiles at each other. Ki Yadav the Chai says, and Shimi says, Chafala, your servant knows, Ki Anicha Tati, Yimine Bati Ayom Rishon, Lechol Beit Yosef. I'm coming now as a representative of the house of Yosef. He's from Binyamin, but he refers back to Yosef. Which again has got a whole sort of a reference there, which you can see it here. The Mefarshim talk about this. Loredet likrat adonai amenet, to come towards the king. So at this point, what are they going to do with Shimi? Vayan Avishai ben Tzeruya vayomah tachat zon lo yuchal lo yumat Shimi ki kilel ad Mashiach Hashem. He says basically kill him. You know, Avishai, one of the again another nephew of David ben Tzeruya that we mentioned. He says, you know, this is it. Shimi deserves to die. He did a terrible thing. He joined the rebellion. He cursed you. Look what he was saying to you in that incredible story. He deserves to die. And Vayomer David, Ma li v'lachem b'nei Tzeruya. We heard this before. David says, you sons of Tzeruya, you know, my nephews are very zealous, but you want to do away with everybody. He says, what's with you guys? Ki tiyulu ayom le-satan, you're now going to be an impediment towards me. Satan is an interesting word. For ha-seh satan mil-fanenu mi-achareinu. Doesn't mean Satan, doesn't mean a little man with horns. Nothing to that. That is not a Jewish concept. Satan means an impediment. Either a physical impediment, usually meaning a spiritual impediment. All right, something holding you back. So he says, now you're going to be le satan. You're trying to be an impediment, holding me back. Hayom yumat ish b'Yisrael. You want to say that man is going to die today? Ki alo yadati ki hayom ani melech al Yisrael. Today I'm the king of Israel. In other words, I make the decisions and you guys zip it. Okay, and he's telling Avishai in no uncertain terms. Hayom hamelech al Shimi. Again, the language is so significant. The king, Hamelech, says to Shimi, this is David raising himself up to the stature of who he is, and he says to Shimi, Lo tamut, you're not going to die. Vayishav elo Hamelech, and he makes an oath, unreal. And he keeps Shimi going, and of course, you know, you understand, David has got this dimension of not only the physical presence and everything about him, but there is such a deep spiritual presence. He heard the word Chatati, he heard Shimi's sense of tshuva, and I guess David sort of in his heart, in his soul, you know, the man, Ish Kadosh, felt this was sincere, and he accepted it. Unbelievable.
He already bought it.
But he did. You'll see, at the end, he's still got his doubts. He has it, but he employs him as the Rebbe of his son. which is so interesting. But that's there's something to say about that, but that's for another discussion. Chav Hei, now we've got another loose end to tie up, which is Mephibosheth. Remember, Tziva comes along previously and brought food, the servant of Mephibosheth, and starts making a whole story about the fact Mephibosheth was not loyal to David. So now Mephibosheth has to defend himself. Mephibosheth is the grandson of Shaul. So what is he going to do? Mephibosheth ben Shaul, yarad likrat ha-melech, says the son of Shaul. It's actually the son of the son of Shaul. But very often, the son and the grandson is given the same title, Ben. And he goes towards the king. Remember, he's lame, so he hasn't really made himself fit to appear. His feet are not washed, it says, and he didn't cut his moustache, or he didn't sort of trim, it says over here, his moustache. Asai didn't make his moustache. Et begadav lo kibes, he hadn't washed his clothes. He's in a mess. Lemin ayom lechet ha-melech ad ayom ha-sheba b'shalom, from the day the king left to the day the king came back. So he was probably pretty, not very nice to be near. Vayihi kiva Yerushalayim likrat ha-melech, he comes to Jerusalem to meet the king. So the king immediately says, Mephibosheth, what are you doing? You never went with me. Why didn't you come with me? I suppose he might say I couldn't walk, so they would have put him on a some sort of wagon or whatever. He's asking Mephibosheth, especially as he's given Mephibosheth sustenance for all those years. He promised Yonatan that he would support the child of Yonatan, whoever he would be, in the palace. And Mephibosheth was the child who was supported by the king. So now the king has got a very righteous and sort of obvious question to ask. Mephibosheth, where were you? So what does Mephibosheth say? Vayomar, Adoni HaMelech Avdi Rimani. He says, my servant tricked me. In other words, Mephibosheth is going to give a counter story to Tziva. Tziva, remember, says Mephibosheth was within the rebellion. Now Mephibosheth is going to say it's not true. And David, again, has to decide who's telling the truth and who's not telling the truth. It's like Mishpat Shlomo here. He's going to have to decide. And he says, Vayomar Adoni HaMelech Avdi Rimani, I was tricked by my servant. Ki amav dechai ech b'shali achamor ve'kav aleh. Because my servant said that I'll saddle the donkey, I will go. Because your servant is lame. In other words, he promised that he would take me to you. But what happened was that he slandered you. Ragel, the idea of telling some sort of Lashon Hara or whatever. El Adoni HaMelech. About the king, do what's good in your eyes. In other words, when Tziva came to you, what happened was that he told you this bad story about me. O king, you do what you think is right. And of course, he's allowing the king to make a decision. All my father's house have died because, as it were, because of the king, or at the hands of the king. And you placed your servant as one of the people who you support, you give me food. What more charity could I have? And what more can I say to you, to the king? I appeal for my life. In other words, he's begging for his life, saying that he wasn't in the rebellion at all. So the king said, why are you continuing speaking? I hear what you have to say. I already said that what will happen is you have to give up your inheritance between you and Tziva. You'll have to pay the price, as it were, of this, because I suppose David is saying, I don't really know who to believe. I'm not quite sure here. And he's already divided the Yerusha. But Yomam Mephibosheth Amalek Gam et Akol Yikach. So Mephibosheth says he should take it all, take the whole thing. Acharei Sheba Aduni Hamelech B'Shalom Beter. As long as you've come home, everything is fine. And that's all we hear from Mephibosheth. Very interesting. And again, we're trying to tie up the loose ends over here. I'm not sure. Is the king really going to have the same relationship to Mephibosheth now as he had before? Clearly not. And now, of course, you've got the other guys who supported the king that he's going to reward. Barzilai Giladi Yarad Meroglim. Barzilai, this who was from the Eretz of Gilad, came from this place called Roglim, who helped the king while the king was running away. V'yavor et HaMelech HaYarden, and he crossed over with the king to the Yarden, Shalcha et Bayarden, and to send, to escort him into the across the Yarden. Barzilai came over ben Shmonim Shana. This Barzilai was very old. He was 80 years old. And he helped the king. He gave him food when he was in Machanai, and that was the name of the place. Ki ish gadol, because he was obviously very wealthy. He was ish gadol. literally mean a great person, but in the sense of well. So he said, Barzilai, come with me. Kilkati otchan, I'll support you in Madi Yerushalayim. Come to Jerusalem. Come to Yerushalayim and everything will be fine. So Barzilai at this point said no. Interesting phrase. See that once before. We see it with Paro and Yaakov. Very interesting. But there it's Paro asking Yaakov the question, how old are you? In this case, Kami Yomei Shnei Chayai, how much more can I? It's like a rhetorical question. Slightly different, but it's the same phrase. Ki Elet HaMelech Yerushalayim, that I would go up to the king. In other words, thank you, O King. I would normally come. I'd have a nice apartment somewhere in Rehov Melech George. I'd be very happy with Rehov Melech David, even better. And the reality is, you know what? I'm an old man. I want to stay at home. Ben Shmonim Shana Anochi Ayom. I'm 80 today. Obviously having some sort of party. Haida Ben Tov Lorad. And I'm already beyond it, as he said. I don't know between good and evil. I'm already old. Im Yitam Avdechai Tashe Ochal Tashe Shteh. He says, I'm not even able to listen to the singers, the men and women singing. And all the rabbis have a big problem with this pasuk, because what's he doing listening to them? And there's a lot of discussion about it. If you really want to research this and you really think there is a problem with this, and I hope most people don't think there's a problem with this, Sharim Vesharot, you know, the mixed choir. In England, there was a tradition in synagogues for hundreds of years. Probably going back to the earliest synagogue in the city of London, the Ashkenazi synagogue, the great synagogue, which was destroyed in the Second World War, that they always had men and women singing in a mixed choir on a Shabbat. And it was allowed by the chief rabbis. Sorry?
Before it became Usher,
absolutely.
I'm serious. Yes, before.
There's a little note over here, which there's a quote here from D. Cohen. It may be Reb Dovid Cohen, I don't know. He suggests that these songstresses were premenstrual, so there wasn't a problem listening to them anyway, because they were too young. But I don't think the Hasidim would go for that. But I don't know. It's an interesting thing. So it's so interesting. Like in the middle of all of this, you get into a halachic debate, Sharim v'Shara. But basically, all right, I'm going to put that all to one side. I'll leave you to deal with that in your own time. The reality is that David is, Barzilai is saying, I'm too old. I can't leave home. I'm going to be a burden on you. So he says, Kimat Yavav Avdechai, Tayadein, verse 37, Lam Zayin. So he says that, you know, I just went over the Jordan and Tamelech with the king. Why do you want to give me such a reward? In other words, you know, Lozmer, I don't deserve. Well, not that I don't deserve it, but I'm just. It's not for me. Yashav na avdecha va'amud be'iri. I'll die in my own city. In kevavi ve'imi, I'll be in my family plot. Kind of a very how should we say, kind of practical sort of guy. But he says, you know what? I have a servant. But he says, kim kim ham. In fact, it was his son. He said, if you want to give somebody a bit of cover, take my son. At least he'll get a bit of cover with you. Do what is good in your eyes. You know, you can pay for his college, whatever, his fund. So he agreed. He says, let this guy Kim Ham come with me. But I suppose Kim Ham is from the Yiddish, Kim Ahein. So that was his name. That was a bad joke, but somebody must have spotted that. In other words, basically, I will do with him everything which, you know, you've chosen for me, I will do for you. In other words, he'll get the benefit, you're right. And Gegazunte Barzilai, you know, you should be Bizahudun and Tzvansi. So now the whole entourage moves across the Jordan. He gives him a big kiss and he blesses him. Barzilai goes home. Now, one final problem before we end. He goes to Gilgal. Kimham Avarimol. This guy Kimham is with him. All the men of Yehuda come with him. And half of Am Yisrael. In other words, he's got a very big entourage with him now. Everyone's following the king. The men of Israel come to the king. They say to the king, you can't please the Jews. They're very difficult people to please. The king's coming back. It's a big celebration. Immediately there's an argument. There's a machlokas. What's the machlokas? The men of Yehuda are taking you over. What do you mean? That he's a man of Yehuda himself? No, they want to have their picture on the front page. You know, they want to have their honor as much as the men of Yehuda are going to have the honor of accompanying the king. The men of Israel also want to accompany the king. So there's now breaking out an argument between the two sides. Unbelievable. And the men of Yehuda say that, the men of Israel say, the other tribes, they say, the men of Yehuda have stolen you. They took you over the Jordan, they monopolized you to bring you back. And what's going on? And the men of Yehuda say, you know, this is correct. And they answer, what do you want from us? Why are you so angry? Have we eaten of the king, or has he given us some sort of prayer? In other words, have we done anything more than we really should have done anyway? So what are you arguing about? As Abe rightly pointed out, you've got the echoes here of a split. And it's not a reality yet, but you can see it coming. And it will happen. And when it happens, wow, it's unbelievable. And he says, Vayanish Yisrael Adish Yehuda, Vayomer, Esi Adot Li B'melech, I've got 10 hands in the king. In other words, we're 10 tribes. You, Yehuda, you're only one tribe, right? You know, 10 meaning 11. Essentially, Yehuda and Binyamin always went together. So whatever it is, the reality is that, you know, we've got more claim to the king. Gam b'David ani mimcha, so we're also more, a stronger claim in David than you. Umadua hikilotani, why then do you slay me? Why do you cause me this particular shame? V'lo hayad devari rishon li la'ashiv et malki. We were the first ones, surely, to say, to bring the king back, because Yehuda, remember, didn't go along with this at the beginning. V'yikesh devar ish Yehuda midevar ish Yisrael. And there is a machloikus. Now the problem is, of course, what is David going to do about this? And it's so sad. David is caught up here now in some sort of rivalry amongst the Bnei Yisrael, the whole camp of Israel, and the camp of Yehuda, to the point where he needs to say something, and he doesn't. And at this point, you'll see the next rebellion is really as a result of this kind of inaction. Sorry? It doesn't say, and it's kind of difficult to estimate that. It's an interesting question. There's no obvious gentleman standing out here, as with the men of Yehuda. There's no obvious gentleman. But this becomes, you know, you can see, as always, there's two Jews, there's three opinions. This is nothing, nothing is new here. Yeah.
Is this the first time you've ever
had this split? It's kind of there in the works, but now it's really it's getting serious. And
We're all
chosen this. And of course, we have sensed it all the way along. If you look back over the book of Judges, you'll see already that Yehuda was given a separate status, but not to the point where they would stand on their cover the way that they're doing so here. And this becomes very, very significant, as I said, not for the end of the book of Shmuel so much, but once we get into the book of Kings, it really becomes difficult. I just want to wish everybody a Chag Kosher Sameach. We really sort of, as I said, sort of exciting material that we're in. Are we going to end on a high? I hope so. The end of the book of Shmuel, for those of you who are sort of adventurous to read to the end, you only got another few chapters to read, you'll see that there is a bit of a high. After we get over the next rebellion, we're going to be going into more wonderful territory, certainly looking forward to Binyan Beit HaMikdash, and which we hopefully will be zocher ready for Chag HaPesach to be able to bring the Korban Pesach bin Harav Yemeinu. Wish everybody a very good evening and a Chag Kosher v'Sameach.